Lynn, can you hear us?
Well, I'm getting an echo.
Great.
Deafening echo.
Okay, good. So let me now introduce. We have a bit of a we're loose on the schedule, you'd say. We have a very special guest speaking remotely from Virginia is Mr. Lyndon LaRouche. So let me introduce Lynn and take it away.
Well, let me say that what I'm going to deal with here is a important question and a little rarely understood question. It deals with the question of economy, the principles of economy, in which I am somewhat of an expert, and goes into the question of Glass-Steagall. There's a difference between the economic roles of animals and people, and the rates of creativity among man or beasts. The decline, the recent decline of the transatlantic economies, including that of the USA, have threatened the doom of civilization now. The Queen of England, the Queen Emperor, Empress of much of the world, for example, is actually, in a sense, opposing what we have to oppose in dealing with. The national economy, the economy of living people, which I'm addressing now, takes into consideration the actual physical effects on the economy and on the population. The method that is generally used for economy is based on sense perception. It's based on simple sense perceptions of observation. And that does not work, because the fact is that with the ordinary economic measures of comparing the amount of money you spend to the amount of result you get is misleading. We have, in the course of the recent years, the recent decades actually, actually goes back to the 1960s, that we have lost our productivity per capita. The United States is no longer as productively efficient as before. Other things which do not contribute to the actual net physical output of economy have taken over. And the increase of this process has brought about a breakdown of the entire transatlantic economic region. There are somewhat different reasons for Europe's collapse and that of the United States. The United States is still stronger because of our political structure than the nations of Europe, which are on the verge of a general breakdown. However, in the United States itself, the hyperinflation which is existing here and the crushing of the net output of production inside the United States has brought us, first of all, to a straight physical tend for a breakdown, but it also is worse because we have a hyperinflationary factor in terms of the Wall Street crowd and the corresponding British elements. These elements have brought us to the point of a general breakdown. Now, for example, the amount of debt, which is represented by Wall Street and by similar organizations in Europe, is vastly outweighs any true value of what is produced, for example, in the United States or Europe. We're on the point of a general collapse, because the debts represented by the Wall Street crowd and similar kinds of things are so vast relative to a collapsing rate of net physical output in our U.S. economy that we were on the verge of a total breakdown. And only if we address that particular problem can we expect to deal successfully with what threatens our nation in particular right now. We are crucial. If we proceed, as I would propose, the economy of the United States, the physical economy, will have a certain effects which are very significant. First of all, what's happened is that what we spend, because of the collapsing rate of productivity in our economy, which is part of the green policy. The green policy has caused the greatest rate of collapse of net productivity the United States has ever experienced. So you can blame the green policy, which is pushed, of course, by George Bush, and other people of that type, and now Obama, that these people and their policies are bringing us to a point of an absolute breakdown. If we were to agree to actually pay the demands of the international, that is the transatlantic in particular, region, then we would be wiped out quickly. And as a matter of fact, those debts, as of now, will never be paid. Which means, as we've seen recently, that we had a phenomenon called the bail-in. What this means is that the debts, the undeserved debts of the speculators are gobbling up all that's left of the possibility of real incomes inside the United States as in Europe. So therefore, what we're headed toward is a point at which the bail-in process is accelerated to the point there is nothing much left for the population of the United States. In fact, now, the discussion is to eliminate all people who are living who are presently in their 60s. That's the current policy. In other words, the point is coming, they will never pay these debts. They never could pay these debts. The banking systems, the speculative banking systems of Europe and the United States could never pay these debts, and therefore never will. And if you are one of the people who's being cheated, your case would seem to be hopeless, unless we bankrupt them instead. Now, that could be done very simply. Just take Glass-Steagall, as it was originally installed under President Franklin Roosevelt, and that itself would simply call into question every amount of this speculative investment by the speculators of Europe and the United States. And if we held our ground, they would go bankrupt. Well, that's not a catastrophe because they didn't have any wealth to speak of, really. They were just, you know, looting us, looting our people, looting the world. So therefore, the Glass-Steagall policy, if instituted now as we're on the verge of reaching the goal of reinstating Glass-Steagall, would shut down all those things which are worthless values, which are being held both in Europe and elsewhere as in the United States. So this reorganization of putting the bankrupt parts of the system, the speculative parts, into bankruptcy reorganization, at the same time we put in Glass-Steagall, would mean that we can immediately launch the process of a recovery of the U.S. economy. And other nations in parts of the world could do the same thing or do something similar, as for example, as in Europe or elsewhere. But it means bankrupting the speculators. These guys have incurred debts in the, the quadrillion millions that they could never pay. Therefore, they should be foreclosed as swindlers and bankrupts and relieved of their debts by eliminating their possession of those debts as assets. That would enable us to restart a recovery of the economy in the U.S. itself, but would also provide the stimulus and incentive for Europe to do something similar and other nations to cooperate similarly. We're presently on the verge of several things. First of all, we're headed in the direction of thermonuclear war, global thermonuclear war. Now, we have powerful forces such as Dempsey in the United States, whose particular assignment is to prevent that from occurring. And that's very valuable. But the danger still exists. So therefore, the thing we have to do is make sure that the debts, European and other debts, the speculative, the gambling money, that this does not become a means of threading wars over financial and related issues. We simply have to insist we're going to bankrupt, close the books on all the undeserved claimed assets of the speculators in the transatlantic and other regions. That will enable us to launch a recovery. However, the recovery is not so easy, because if you look at our agricultural sector, the Western Plains, up toward California, look what California used to be. It was a prize in World War II and on. And then it was crushed and looted. We have farmers committing suicide because they've lost their careers, they've lost the meaning of their lives as farmers. Bankruptcy throughout this region, sudden collapse of households, more bankruptcy. We've lost the cattle we used to have in California. We've lost the ability to grow crops in the middle of the United States because we've allowed things to run the water supplies and other things down so low. We've killed our cattle. We don't have a cattle anymore. We don't have the means to sustain the economy. We have a bunch of clowns who are taking the foodstuffs, the food produced, and turning it into gasoline or similar kinds of things. And that amount of looting of the food supplies which they're produced and turned into kerosene or something like that is actually creating a threat of mass starvation inside the United States itself. So what this means essentially is, first of all, we have been greatly injured. Actually, since the assassination of John F. Kennedy, we have been actually on a measurable physical decline in the productive powers of labor per capita in the United States since we got involved in the Vietnam War. That Vietnam War was a turning point from what had happened under our president at the time, and now has turned us into losers. It's been a long process. We've had some presidents who meant well but didn't succeed too well, and we've had other presidents in more recent years who have actually been part of the process of destroying the U.S. economy, bankrupting and looting the American people. And those kinds of presidents, of course, should not be kept in office in the United States these times. But we have a situation where we have a hopelessly wrecked situation in the western central area of the United States and in California, which used to be the richest part of the United States. And this has been done by a matter of policy which has been launched under several presidents of the United States. In other words, our own people, our own citizens, have collapsed and caven in to these kinds of policies. Now the time has come. We're past the point that we can really be prosperous ever again in terms of current trends. And therefore, we now have to think about not only stopping this stuff, foreclosing these kinds of speculative operations which are ruining us, and beginning to build up again, build our economy up again. It's going to be difficult. And it's going to require a cessation of the emphasis on the so-called green policy. If we continue the green policy, which is why people are turning foodstuffs into gasoline, that thing must be stopped. That must be canceled. No more conversion of precious and short food supplies in order to turn these things into fuels. That's a very foolish thing to do. So that's where we stand. Now, if we wish to recover, we can. The means exist. I know the means. But it's going to be tough. We don't have the ability to grow food in areas such as California, which are one of the richest food suppliers in the United States, or in the Central Plains regions, or down in Texas. The loss of cattle, in particular, is grievous. And there's no hope right now for any significant sudden recovery. We're going to have to fight our way back. We're going to have to go more to thermonuclear technologies in order to accelerate our ability to increase the usable power needed, say, as for a NWAPA project, in order to rebuild the economy that we lost since the death of two brothers, the Kennedy brothers, back in the 1960s. It's been a march, step by step, down, 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 down. And the time has come where you had presidents who were not such bad people, but they didn't perform too well, or they weren't able to perform too well over other people who were controlling them. And we've had presidents who were skunks, particularly recently. We've got, I think, three prominent cases of real skunks. And we don't need those. So we have to have a fight. And the fight is we've got to go with the Glass-Steagall policy. We've got to take it and try to get it on an international basis, not just a U.S. basis, and use that as a basis for organizing a recovery of the economies, which means the standard of living, food supplies, and so forth, of the relevant people. And if we do this, we will free ourselves of the current very deadly and growing threat of a thermonuclear war. A thermonuclear war which started in the eastern part of the Mediterranean region and neighboring places and spreading to other places would, if it occurred, would mean the virtual extinction of the human species. Now, General Dempsey, our General Dempsey, and other people of similar persuasions have been working hard to fight against that possibility. But the possibility is nonetheless actually still growing. And it's growing because our President of the United States currently is for it and behind it. Because the British monarchy is for it and behind it, though many Britons themselves otherwise are not. And the similar thing spreads throughout Europe. So we're at the edge where, unless we have a general reform which takes down the power, the political power, of certain forces in the United States and elsewhere who are responsible for the various kinds of susceptibilities and other problems we have, unless we take that down, we could lose it. We could lose it all. And anyway, the fact is the policies that have been creeping in more and more in the United States since the beginning of the 1970s, those policies are the things that really gradually, step by step, have ruined us so far. And I think nobody who's serious would deny that we've been ruined, especially people who remember what it was like in the 1960s or even earlier. We have been ruined. We can get it back. We're not going to get any bonanza suddenly. We're going to have to work hard to deal with this problem. But if we do, we can exact the kind of leadership which the United States has represented in its entire life since our establishment of our Constitution. That standard can be revived, and that courage and confidence can be revived. And if we do that, we'll immediately save our nation from the great dangers which threaten us now. But it will also open the opportunity and the stimulus for gathering in other nations to cooperate with us, nation by nation by nation, sovereign nation by sovereign nation by sovereign nations. No empires, none of these double things. If we do that, we can have won back our republic. And more than that, we can have turned the direction of the movement of human development away from the downslide, the catastrophe which strikes us now, and begin to move things with cooperation among nation states all the way up. It's the only option we really do have. There are no schemes or other options waiting out there to deliver a miracle to our shores. We have to do it. Now, in terms of how this could happen, as I said in a discussion yesterday, that if we wish to, we can restart our economy immediately with Glass-Steagall. In fact, the idea of using Glass-Steagall or similar kinds of measures among other nations would work, but it's going to be a little bit difficult. So therefore, we're in a situation where if we can get that kind of cooperation by our initiative, we will find ourselves able to assist nations in Europe and elsewhere to do something approximately, at least, to what we will be doing by suddenly re-establishing Glass-Steagall as our national standard. If we bring people together on the basis of our national standard of that quality, they may not all accept Glass-Steagall as such, but they will accept something which goes in the same direction. On that basis, we have a basis for productive cooperation. And with productive cooperation, the hope of the world is great, because a relief from the kinds of ugly, crushing oppression which hits the United States now and hits nations in Europe, continental Europe in particular, worse in the main than it's hitting us. We bring those forces together to join together in cooperation to eliminate this speculation, eliminate this fake money, eliminate these fake promises, and get back to a hard dollar, get back to the policies that go with a hard dollar in the tradition of our nation. That can work, but it's the only option we really have. And beyond that, anything better means that we stir up the imagination, the creative imagination among at least some of our people. And that revival of that kind of imagination, of creative imagination, is the one thing which can promise us the kind of future we can now see that a simple action by us could do for the United States. Glass-Steagall will save the United States, provided that the condition of other nations does not drag us down. If we do Glass-Steagall in the immediate days and weeks ahead, that will assure that this nation is going to continue to live and survive. And if we do that, nations in Europe which are tied into other arrangements and other arrangements will abandon those relationships and join us. And they too will tend to join with the idea of a Glass-Steagall system rather than the kind of swindle which is operating now. That's our best option. We can do that. And, well, anyway, that's what I have to say.
Given Lynn's role in these last 40-some years now in leading this historic political fight, and truly the second American Revolution, Lynn, do you have time for a couple of questions? Do you have a couple of questions?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, so if we have a couple of people with some very pertinent questions, because of Lynn's time and because of the nature of Lynn's role, I'll invite a few brave souls. So we have one. Just come up to the mic. One more person can come up to the mic. We'll take two.
I'm here. Mr. LaRoche, I am honored to have the opportunity to be at this conference today. Can you hear me?
Yes, I hear you.
I'm a retired physician, but I understand from a conversation I had earlier this morning that we have something unique in common. I didn't realize, sir, that you spent time in federal prison until this morning. For having the courage that you have to do what you've done, I am honored, again, to be a part of it. And I've come to this conference today with a very open mind. I'm inspired. I want to learn a ton more. I'm embarrassed to say that until a couple of months ago, I didn't even know about Glass-Steagall. So keep the movement going. I'm honored. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
I don't have a question, actually. I have the statement that I wanted to give you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Mr. LaRoche. I'm very happy to be able to be here and to speak with you. And I do have a question that's basically coming out of the community from which I live, which is in Los Angeles, and that is the black community there. We've noticed a tremendous amount of erosion of rights, things like voter registration and so many other questionable things that have been going on. And the question that has been put to me by people that come to our table sometimes is that, okay, well, if you get Glass-Steagall, that's great, that's financial. But then they say, well, what's going to happen with all of these different rights within the country that have been eroded, that have the potential to cause a lot of the suffering and strife that was, you know, that really has the potential to, you know, make human relations and things like this collapse once again in this country. So they're saying, well, what about those? What'll happen with these rights once you get Glass-Steagall in? That's what they're asking.
Well, I think the greatest danger of that character to which you've referred lies with the younger people. What has happened recently, especially under the Bush family presidency and Obama and so forth, has been that the destruction, the moral destruction of the character of our people, the loss of courage, the tendency toward corruption and so forth, is a big problem. However, there are other aspects. Just simple quantity never answers a situation like this. Because when people go through a rehabilitation of their conscience, they sometimes come out much better people than they ever were before. So therefore, the fact that we have many young people, youth, who have no future, they have no intention of a future. They're being destroyed by the conditions in which they've been subjected to in the past 20 years in particular. And therefore, yes, they are a very difficult problem. But history before us has shown that if we can create a leadership which can inspire the mobilization of many people who had drifted off, shall we say, from the noble mission of our nation, that we can mobilize them. We're seeing that now in our national mobilization. We have a limited number of people who are working day by day with us, and the number is increasing rapidly. But more than that, we're finding that our affinity with people who are outside that group, people who are senators, as, you know, other members of our political institutions, and other people, just plain other people, are coming to us because they realize that what we're doing is something which will work to the effect they believe they need it. And therefore, if we maintain the dynamic of getting Glass-Steagall through, and that's the big objective on which everything depends. If we get Glass-Steagall through in its original form, again, we will, and we can do it soon enough, we will find right now, when you look at the downside that's hitting Obama and other people right now, we're in a position with our few people, but the friends that we have drawn around us, not because they want to worship us or something like that, but because they know we're doing something and they weren't. And they know that since we're doing something which they know is good, they will support and work with us on that basis. If we can get a bill through, and the bill is now presented, if we can get that bill through to get Glass-Steagall quickly installed again, that will ensure a sweeping remoralization of sufficient forces in the United States that we can make things work. And the problem is that when people become discouraged, then they begin to think about who are they going to cut out, who are they going to drop off the list of people they support. If they know that if we stay united around credible, plausible programs, they know we can win. We can win the objective, and we can afford somehow to deal with the problem of this growing number of young people who've been turned into monsters in their own mind. And that, I think, is our mission.
Just because of the circumstances. We can have one more question. Glenn, can you handle one more question?
Hi, Lynn. I have a question, and I've been coming around for about 10 years, and I know that recently we haven't been recruiting as many young people as, I guess, as we could, and I know that there are different factors that, you know, have prevented that, like, you know, now the further breakdown of the political situation, you know, economic situation, also the cultural the culture is also a factor in that. So I guess my question to you is, how do you think we could, you know, get younger people to look into these ideas given, you know, these problems? So get involved into what we're doing.
Well, these younger people are doubtful if you look at, let's be frank, you take a Bush, well, you got three Bushes who are running in the presidency in this cycle. Now you've got Obama. Now, those four people are really discouraging to any thoughtful young person in this country. When they think of it, you know, four terms in office, you know, or more, of people who are totally, you know, enemies, really, of the interests of our people, that discourages people. They say, where's it coming from? Well, you're talking about something of good, but who's going to do it for us? Then nobody's going to do it for us. And therefore, that's the problem you have to hit on, and hit on hard. We can do it. And the Glass-Steagall, the restoration of Glass-Steagall, immediately, now, in just in the original form, right now, will turn this country around. And people you would thought of would never do anything good about this because they're discouraged or angry will turn to us and cooperate. Because what are we going to do? We're going to give them the prospect of employment. We're going to give them the prospect of saving their health care, the prospect of all these things that they need. They're not going to turn that down. They may be grouchy, but that's grouchy is better than bad. And if we can turn people who are enraged against what they've lived through and turn them into people who are giving us a chance to do the job that will solve the problem, and a lot of people in this country who know things know that I will do that. I may be old and so forth, I'm over 90, but I can still do a little bit. And while I'm around to do a little bit, I think we can win something big.
Lynn, your comments are invaluable. We thank you for everything that you do and taking the time today to address this conference. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Okay.